I have to be honest, I tried out some of this talk with my own group last week. It's like I might as well double dip a little, right? But it's a good message. I mean, this is tomorrow's Earth Day, right? I don't know how many of you celebrate Earth Day. And each year I think about that. Now this year we might have winter and spring Earth Day. But there's so much. And there's just so much to think about, to research, to sit with, to decide where our place is for a celebration of Earth Day. What is our communication between our own energies and each other and this beautiful world that we are a part of? And I'm sure some of you have heard these books, but when I was going through this, I was like, I'm a reader and a researcher, and sometimes I can go down that rabbit hole just a little too much. But there are some very lovely books written within just the last 20 years about our connection. I find that fascinating because it's like the science world and our spiritual world and our energy of understanding is finally merging in a way that people can talk about it without putting them in separate camps. So you can find books called Finding the Mother Tree, which is absolutely amazing, Braiding Sweetgrass, Plants and Gathering Moss, Our Minds Shape Our Futures, Embracing Our Ancient Bond with Forests. There's just a lot. And I would encourage you to go out and find a book and share with each other. And know that those are some of the books that some of this is taken from. So I want to honor those authors. And to recognize that they're recognizing in a big way how much this world is alive and able to communicate. Now, we interact with the world, but that world itself will be here long after we have been here, even humans as a whole. There's going to be some type of earth or cosmic presence well after us. And there's a consciousness there that's beautiful and lovely and that we don't often think about. The trees and the mosses and the grasses and the birds, even the bugs and the flowers and fungi, and even the tiniest little critter that they're finding way down deep in the ocean, all have some kind of consciousness flow that connects to us. So we can't live without that. It's so Earth Day isn't so much of a how do we manage it and honor it, it's how do we recognize this existence is us and flowing through us all of the time. I recently had a conversation with Andrew Sippel, who's the education director at Goodell Gardens. Some of you may know him. And he was telling me about a class he took and with other educators about a new curriculum that's being brought and developed in Pennsylvania. And it's an approach that says, okay, children, you're going to go and you're going to explore. So when they bring children in for field trips for someplace like Presque Isle, they'll go, instead of telling them exactly what they're going to learn, we're like, go explore, come back and tell us what your questions are, and then the educator's responsibility is to find the tools or have tools available, whether those are microscopes or whatever, so that they can go out and start to discover the answers for themselves. Wow. Right? So to be inquisitive and to explore and not to be told what it is we need to learn from it and to allow that organic connection, which I think we've kind of had all along. I mean, if we were able to be outside growing up and climbing the trees and whatever, nobody said, okay, now we have to learn this and that and the other thing about whatever it is we're playing with. But if we're fascinated enough and start dragging sticks and rocks home, there's a basis there to have a conversation. So I think we're returning to a place where exploring is the learning. And in that exploring, we learn that communication. We move into a place that we are with nature rather than learning about it or something or learning how to use it. It's knowing that we are nature as much as nature is nature. So I'm not too far from you in Edinburgh, so I'm sure you have the similar experience here where there's many small farms and family farms and small producers. And oh, it's been a while now, but there was a farm about 4 miles up the road from me that was a dairy farm. And I could actually take my children to that farm with empty jugs on certain days, and they could watch as they poured the milk that went right into the cooling system, right into their jugs. We took home the milk. The lady that ran the farm, she let them walk around the barn, pet the calves, you know, chase after the cats while they were there. You know, it was a place where nothing was hidden, very family-oriented, and you knew you were connected there, and you knew how they treated the animals, and you could just feel it was a love place. They loved what they were doing, and so you knew when you went there, your food was fresh. I mean, how much more fresh can you get than giving them your jug and watching them fill it up? So those things, I wish that something like that could be parceled out to these places, because there's a lot of children, even in our area, that don't know that their milk comes from a cow. They've never even seen that. They've never been out to a place where animals are running around and people take care of them, and they don't have any idea whatsoever. They really believe that their food and their nourishment comes from a package. And if it doesn't come out of a package, then what is it that I'm eating? And I have to be honest, I grew up that way. I don't know that my parents just didn't know any better. So I don't want to like say they were evil parents, but I really don't think they understood, because I honestly didn't think I liked food. We had all kinds of problems in the family, especially me, with being sick a lot. And then it came down, especially holidays, big holidays when I would go and be with extended family, and there'd be the big meals, and I was sick every holiday. Fast forward a few years, and I don't know, I was around 30, and my mother had listened to some podcast, they didn't call them podcasts then, but you get the idea, about the food system and the hormones in the food and the antibiotics, and she made a choice to buy different type of food. She read labels, and then that Thanksgiving, she said, "You're not sick. You didn't go and lay down and leave after dinner." I'm like, "No, I didn't. What's up?" And then explore that more and more and more, and find out the more we pay attention to how we work with our natural environment, the healthier for me, especially, because then I could enjoy family get-togethers without being immediately sick. And our natural world is always authentic. It can't be any other way. Sometimes humans have a hard time being authentic. What is it that we really are, our talents really are? And creation around us, our natural world, their natural abilities is right there. How they support each other. In the book, the Mother Tree, he talks about how the fungi underneath the forest creates some bridge for nourishment between the trees, and how there's kind of a talking system that goes on so that they can take care of each other. And they can't help but be that way. And they are authentic in their actions. I think that's something that we can all learn from our natural world, is to shine in whatever ability you have within you and that talent that's expressed. Because in that cooperation in the natural world, it just gets stronger and more beautiful and more healthy. And think how much more healthy each of us would be with each other if your talent shone, whatever it is that your talent is. Some may call them their soul talents, or like our lovely piano player over here. You know, just shine that talent. To not be afraid to try new things and explore. I think sometimes we've outsourced ourselves so much in the name of advancement. Not that we don't need technology, because I was just admiring your lovely microphone here, and things like these are great. Technology is beautiful. And yet, to merge that in a way that doesn't detract from everything else that's going on. How many of you have seen some of the places that grow the gardens on the ceilings and then in the roofs of places? And there's a place in the Netherlands that is one of the greenest, in quotes, places on the planet in terms of their urban area, because they have roofs filled with gardens on almost every building. And that helps with a load of things, not just food, but cooling the whole urban area down, the water supply, keeping that clean. It's simple things that we can do. And how we align in that awareness. So again, if we recognize, like our meditation says, that we're both the oak and the stardust. We are everything. So we are that conscious bridge that gets to make decisions and has free will. And how cool is that? That we have that opportunity to merge that and to try that and to understand itself. And with that free will and those decisions, yeah, there's consequences, but there's also learning and sharing and growing. And we're the part of the creation that carries the memories and the experience and the knowledge and the emotions and the choices into oneness. Nature is oneness. It's so authentic, it doesn't know any other way. Right? We have this wonderful opportunity to recognize our spiritualness and oneness and our humanity. And how in that beauty can we merge that magic and that healing, and to be with the best that's possible all around us, including ourselves. And the cooperation that's out in our world, how to learn from that to bring it into cooperation for humans. As a side note, when I was, I didn't write this down, but I'm going to share it anyway. When I was, I went back to school when I was, about 28, to finish up some education credits to be certified as a teacher. I had a four-year degree, but I didn't have an education certificate. And in that, I took political science classes, and one of them was world political science. And our professor split us up into a lab of countries, a pretend world, with a map of the pretend world, with all of the resources and all of the people and all of the boundaries and all the waterways and all the things. And said, okay, now, how are we going to manage this world, and how are you going to take care of your people? And then he said, the group, the country that takes care of their people the best will get the A in the class, and everybody else has failed. Imagine how much fear went through that class, right? I remember I put out an invitation. I was an ambassador for my country, so I put out an invitation to the other ambassadors to come, and I thought, maybe we'll just fix this. We just got to fix it now before anything goes further, because this is not happening. Nobody's failing this class. And in the invitation, not one other ambassador came to my little thought there. Move that forward a little bit, and by the time I got back to my group to tell them that none of the ambassadors, a bunch of them had already made alliances with other places. They were so afraid to leave there with a failing grade that chaos immediately, there was no more cooperation, none at all. Fast forward again, basically the world was destroyed. not only did, you know, the whole failing thing, but you literally destroyed the world with people arguing about how to not share their resources, basically, to not share and how to hoard in different areas. The professor said at one time, now at that time he had done that simulation about 15 times. He said only one of those classes had come to him and said, you know what, this isn't fair. Let's talk about this. Let's just settle it now. Gave me a little bit of hope that some other class managed to do what I had in my brain. But to think about only one out of 15 scenarios that that professor had run up until that time was able to move past the fear and move into cooperation. The natural world doesn't have fear. It is. And it works with what it has, and it cooperates the best it can. I mean, you've heard the stories out west when they took the wolves away and the deer destroyed everything. You know, there was no vegetation left. Everything was barren. The water was getting out of control. And they put the wolves back, and within 1 year, the vegetation was back. The water was flowing in the creeks the way it normally had. Nature knows what it's doing, and it's cooperation. And if anything, I think that's what we take away from it. The exchange between flowers and pollinators, between mosquitoes and frogs and fish and birds, dragonflies, all eating pests. You know, we want to get rid of some of those pests, and yet the whole ecosystem would fall apart if you took mosquitoes out of the equation. Think about that the next time somebody's irritating you. Take them out of the equation, and maybe the whole thing falls apart and we don't learn anything. So it's choices. It's choices. And if you don't mind, I'm going to read again the poem I read at the beginning just to close it up. So we have a choice. Amidst the ancient oaks, where roots dwell, a cosmic dance unfolds, a sacred keep, forgotten dreams, like whispered stardust sway, their ethereal threads weaving night and day. Beneath the canopy, our souls take flight, guided by moonbeams and celestial light. In nature's embrace, healing whispers bloom as earthly wounds find solace in her womb. We are co-creators, hands entwined with soil, crafting spells of growth, tending life's toil. Each leaf a rune, each breeze a mystic verse. We honor earth's rhythms, our spirits immerse. And when the sun dips low, painting skies aglow, we gather stardust in our palms, hearts aflow. For we are woven of earth and cosmic fire, roots and stardust, an eternal choir. So go dance with the ancient oaks and dream with the stars. In reverence we heal, transcending earthly bars. Roots and stardust, our essence entwined, a journey of spirit where magic we find.